When we talk about job creation in Wisconsin, we usually talk about monthly reports or make comparisons between job numbers under former Governor Jim Doyle and those under current Governor Scott Walker.
Our next guest says that when we look at growth that way, we might miss the big picture. He says there may be important lessons about Wisconsin's long-term economic health if we just take a step back. Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. Charles, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be here.
Well, what do we lose when we look at those monthly ups and downs in the job numbers in the state?
I think the most important thing is that the month-to-month changes are fairly small. If you look at the state as a whole, we have about 2.4 million employed people. And the month-to-month changes are typically on the order of a few hundred to a few thousand, but 2,000 or 3,000, not a whole lot. And so we're talking about percentage-wise, very small movement from month to month. Where job creation really pays off is over the longer haul when we sustain additional jobs at a steady clip month to month and year to year. And I just think that as we've gotten so caught up on the short-term performance, we've missed some of that larger long-term performance issues.
We'll dig into those longer-term issues in a bit, but it seems like, I think maybe leading up to the recall election, there was more media coverage, more coverage from the parties and the political campaigns of those jobly numbers that I can remember ever seeing before. We all got really excited when those numbers came out.
That's right, and I think that continues. That's driven in part because of Governor Walker's pledge to add 250,000 jobs over the first 4 years, his first term. That was a pretty strong promise, and let me put that in perspective. If you're going to add 250,000 to over 4 years, that requires adding 62,500 per year to get there. During his term, we've been adding about 30,000 a year, or about half what we would need to reach that goal. So that raises the question, was 250,000 ever realistic? If we look back at the 1990s during the expansion period there, there were quite a few years that we were adding about 60,000 and one or two where we actually got to 62,000. And so that shows that in the big expansion of the 90s, it really was possible to at least come close to that goal of 250. But instead, if you look at the period after 2000, and people may remember that we had a recession in 2000, 2001, we had to climb out of that, and having climbed out, we then got hit by the Great Recession. If you look at the period from 2004 to 2006, which was our growth period after that early recession, we added jobs at about a 27,000 a year clip. Now, in the last 3 years, we've been adding them at, again, about a 30,000, maybe as high as 32,000. The numbers fluctuate a little bit depending on how you calculate them. But either way, that says that since 2000, in our best growth periods, we've been running at about half the rate of the 1990s, and we were running at about half that rate during the Doyle administration and about half that rate now. The policies of the Doyle administration and the policies of the Walker administration have certainly been dramatically different from one another, but neither seems to have produced substantially different levels of job growth during the periods of expansion outside of the Great Recessions.
So that's now we're starting to get into the long-term lessons you're looking at. Why is it that growth, even in good times now, isn't as good as growth in the good times back in the 90s?
Well, this is where I think a better discussion would benefit us all. If we talked about not whose plan is going to suddenly produce massive job growth, but rather, what are the features that are holding our economy at a lower level? One part of it, of course, is that the national economy since 2000 has not grown at the substantial rates of the 1990s. And whether you're a Democratic or a Republican governor, you're largely at the mercy of the national economy on some of this. Another part is the structure of our jobs. We're heavily invested in manufacturing, and some of that manufacturing is growing much more slowly or even shrinking, though we do have elements of manufacturing that are higher growth as well. What about preparing citizens for those jobs? That would be education. That would be technical training and so on. We have these conversations quite a bit, but I think that they get obscured by the month-to-month fluctuations. I think it would be useful for us to sit back and say, at the rate we're going now, it's going to take us a long time to recover to where jobs were before the recession. Right now, we're still about 65,000 jobs short of the peak employment from before the Great Recession in 2007. So I think this is an important discussion for us to have, and a little bit more of the long-term focus and a little less on the month-to-month fluctuations might help us discuss this in a reasonable way.
But how do we get to that conversation when, if I'm a politician, a political party, I'm looking for a talking point, a selling point for this month's press release from the current election cycle? How do we get policymakers, politicians in particular, to turn away from that ephemeral stuff that's going on now and look at those long-term trends?
Well, I think there are clearly incentives for any politician to emphasize their accomplishments and the other side's shortcomings. So I think it's probably too much to hope for a candid discussion on this from any party during an election campaign. But both sides do lay out their vision of what kinds of elements stimulate growth. And we will certainly see, or are seeing now, some differences between the Democrats and the Republicans about what kinds of economic policies they'd pursue. But I think looking, again, somewhat in the longer term, there are a number of groups in the state, both policy analysts and for that matter, interest groups, that spend a great deal of time talking about how to stimulate job growth in the state. I think paying some attention to that, but also confronting them, and for that matter, asking the questions of our political candidates about how they see this long-term performance and how that matches up against our aspirations, I think that is a way to go.
You, I believe, first introduced this idea talking to a particular audience, people in the media. What would you like to see from the media to try to drive this conversation from, you know, the month to month to the decade to decade?
Well, as you say, this did begin with a speech I gave to a media group this past week. And my point was simply that when coverage focuses rather myopically on the month-to-month changes, I simply think that misses the longer-term picture. Now, I think a variety of news outlets have also been providing the longer term, and so I don't mean to say that it's never there. But I think the discussion could usefully be moved to some of these broader picture issues and longer-term performance, and especially comparative performance over a period of years rather than a period of a month or two.
Campaigns for governor are often decided by one side or the other making a better case that they will be better for the state's economy. How much of an influence on the state's economy does a governor really have in a state like, say, Wisconsin?
That's right. I think certainly in some things, the national economy is far more important for driving state performance. Where you do see some differences is in some part, business creation and incentives to business to create. In some part, in wages, and we're currently engaged in a debate about whether minimum wage increases would help or hurt employment in the state. And that's one of the kinds of debates I'm talking about being important for us to have and flesh out the differences between the parties in that. And then we have some of the longer term, more structural things that don't have quick payoffs. But that includes the emphasis on job training, the emphasis especially on technical schools and preparation for people for jobs in the manufacturing that we do have, which is still a very substantial part of the state, and much of that manufacturing is pretty high skilled. So I think there are areas where both parties and candidates are talking about and beginning to lay out ideas for that, I think that speaking to the media, it would be helpful to put a bit more emphasis and coverage on those elements of the campaigns and pull back a little bit from these month-to-month fluctuations.
As director of the Marquette University Law School poll, you've got your finger on the pulse out there. What is the public saying about Wisconsin's economy?
The public has somewhat mixed views about it. When we ask about your personal finances, about 75% say they've recovered from the Great Recession, but that still leaves something close to a quarter who say they're still not back to where they were before the recession. When we ask about jobs, it's about evenly split. About 45% say the state is lagging behind other states. About 49% say we're keeping up or even doing better than other states. But specifically on the 250,000 job promise, 80% don't think we will make it there, and that seems like, from the public's point of view, an enormous majority that don't see the chance that we would get there, and certainly the job performance numbers suggest that would be virtually impossible at the current rate to add that many jobs between now and December.
We'll leave it there for now. Charles Franklin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, where he directs the Marquette Law School Poll, also the co-founder of Pollster.com.